Chinook. It's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Profiles. I'm Paula Schiller. Not long ago, I spoke with Ethel Beck, the alternate health aide in the village of Eagle. Her sister Bertha is the primary health aide, and in the neighboring town of Eagle lives Elva Scott, a public health nurse. Together, they have all the medical know-how available in both Eagles and for all the people who live on the river. Those three women help everybody, and since the Indian Health Service took over the health aid program, they get paid for it. Mostly the problems are colds and flu. They watch out for pneumonia and high blood pressure, and there are always the accidents. Combined with that, there is the problem of alcohol. Most of the health aide's work is routine, but sometimes something happens.
Last winter, I was an alternate, October, November, and December. My sister went out on a trap line. And I was the health aide then. And I had one accident. A young guy shot himself.
Mm.
And nobody would go to see him either till I went in to check him out myself. And then a couple of other times I had attempted suicides, but nothing, you know, we don't have that every day. And we just, I hope I never have to encounter that again. But
it must be, make for very hard decisions on your part. Do you feel confident, though, that you can handle those kinds of problems?
When I first started, I was really scared. I always had Bertha, and we have a public health nurse, Elva Scott. She's always been around whenever Bertha goes on a vacation. But Elva Scott goes out on vacation every winter. And she wasn't there, and there were no other nurses or anybody that's had the training around, and Bertha left. And I was really scared till I started doing, you know, the everyday health aid things. And then when that kid shot himself, I really took care of it good, they told me. And I didn't get upset or got carried away or anything, and I took care of it real good. I was calm, and it didn't bother me like a lot of people. Death would bother them, but it didn't bother me. But I prayed a lot too, and I pray every morning before I go to work, and I think that's where my help
is. It calms you down.
Oh yeah.
How long have you been a health aide or working with health?
I kind of figured you were going to ask me that. I really don't remember. I think it's 4 or 5 years now.
Uh-huh.
My sister-in-law and I were health aides when they first started. But we didn't get paid, and we didn't come in for training.
I was going to say that must have been before they started.
Oh, yes.
Health aides.
Yeah. And so, I don't know, we just, we were single and young in those days, and we come in and out of Fairbanks a lot, and we were over here, and that's when they got Bertha as a health aide, and then that's, I forget just what year, but they start paying them. And
but you probably liked the job before if you took it without...
Oh, yes, I've always wanted to be a nurse. And I started out to be a practical nurse, but some problems came up, and I just quit. But I've always wanted to be a nurse.
Are you going to continue training and become a practical nurse, or?
I really don't know. I just got a job at home, and I don't know how long it's going to last. And I really don't care to be a full-time nurse. But the other day, my sister asked me if I would like to be a the health aide, and the primary health aide, and I told her I didn't mind, but yet in a way, I don't know if I want the full-time job.
Is it the responsibility or just the time?
Well, I'm not afraid of the responsibility. I think it's kind of the time. And I think she's doing a good job. And if they put me in her place or I become the health aide, I have to go through all the training that she went through. And that's just spending more money, you know, that don't have to be spent.
Do you ever get a little tired of it?
No, mm-hmm. I never do. The only thing my sister and I don't like is the paperwork. You know, we have to do a lot of paperwork, and that's the only thing that we don't especially care for. But working with patients and with people is really makes us feel good.
You mentioned that drinking was part of the larger problems, and that you yourself don't drink. Do you see yourself as kind of a model, or?
In a way, yes. A lot of, I don't know, I fall too, and I drank last fall, but then after that I get real sick, and I hurt a lot of people, so I told myself I'd never do it again, and I have to pray about it. But I don't know, maybe that's what it is. People know I can drink, and yet I can be strong enough not to. Well, it's not that easy. It's hard for me to quit, too, but once I quit and everything, then I can be strong enough to stay out of it, because I know what it can do to me. And yes, we have, drinking is our main problem in the village. And everybody that's been in to see the doctor in the past has, it's been related to drinking. And we try to talk to our patients and tell them what it's causing. And so it doesn't do any good. I guess people are going to drink, they're going to drink.
You feel your arguments may be more convincing because you know what you're talking about, whereas
yes.
Somebody that never
mm-hmm.
never drank,
right.
They wouldn't listen.
Oh, yes, I, from experience, I can tell them what it does to them and how it affects the family and things. And some of them listen for a while, but eventually they would start drinking again. And it gets very depressing, especially when you see what they're doing to their kids. And we don't know how to help them. And in the past, they've tried AA programs, and it didn't do any good. I guess in order for a person to quit drinking is for them to really want to do it, and there isn't anything we can say or do to make them quit.
Is it maybe being patient with them and not drinking?
Hard
yourself?
To do. It's really difficult. I love to help people, but it's awfully hard to work with a person that's drinking. You could never get really what's wrong with them or examine them right, or just to deal with them when they're drinking. It's awfully hard.
Well, do you see any improvement?
Oh, yes. A little, but not as much as we would like to see.
And you would like to see them get rid of all
Well, we tried. We tried getting rid of liquor, you know, in Eagle, but we couldn't do it. It's hard to do. But not long ago, we started having the community hall open every night, and the kids come around, and once in a while, a few adults come. But we're working on having it open for sewing classes and bingo games, and just try to keep the village busy, and maybe they wouldn't want to spend time drinking. And we're trying to work something. I don't know how it's going to come out, but we're trying to work on something to help the people.
Is that what you like about it, being able to help, or does it you feel better yourself about knowing that you're doing some good?
Well, I guess you'd say it's both. I enjoy helping people, and it just makes me feel good to be able to do it.
Ethel Beck, alternate health aide in the village of Eagle. For Chinook Profiles, I'm Paula Schiller. Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
All culture is changing all of the time. But there has been one big difference in the use of Eskimo music. I believe the sound of Eskimo music is very much the same. They haven't changed the sound very much. But it used to be used to please the hunting spirits, to make sure that the seals came back again. For instance, they would have a song where they blew up the bladders of the seals and threw them back in the sea so that the seal would be entertained at the ceremony and want to come back. Now, the use of Eskimo music is more for emphasizing ethnic pride, how Eskimo we are, and also emphasizing community pride. And they're still composing songs. Songs are still composed for special new occasions. When Gamble dance team from St. Lawrence Island went to visit the president one time, well, it was quite a few years ago now, I suppose, they had a song where they sang 1, 2, 3 very, very energetically, and when the president asked them what that was for, they said, well, that's for you to have a third term.
This is Chinook Echoes. I'm Paula Schiller. And you just heard from Professor Tom Johnson of the University of Alaska Music Department, and we're continuing our discussion of music, stories, and ceremonies of the Inupiaq-speaking people.
One of the most interesting things about the music of the Eskimos of Northwest Alaska these days is the large number of very special dances that are still carried on that are not found anywhere else in Alaska or in Siberia or Canada or Greenland or anywhere else in the world. These would include the spinning top dance of Point Hope, where the whaling hunters, just before the whaling center, just before the whaling season begins, they all gather around a large wooden spinning top with white feathers sticking out of it, and they sing the spinning top dance. And the cord is pulled, and the spinning top throws out all of its feathers into the air, and the hunters are supposed to catch these feathers, and the one that catches the whitest feather, the snow owl feather, he's going to have the best luck in the forthcoming whaling season. But there is also a dark side to this this ancient custom, and that is if you mishandle the top, if you drop it or fail it, you will die within 12 months. And the people at Point Hope, they tell me that this has often happened. Another very ancient dance from Point Hope is the puppet dance, where a very elaborate, beautiful fur puppet, about 2 feet high, is built. And it has strings attached to its legs and its head and its arms. And the puppet dances. Now, this is a survival from some of the ancient ceremonies where there used to be many mechanical contrivances, like birds flying across the ceiling of the Karigi hut, the ceremonial hut, and foxes coming out of holes and flying across in time to music. Other important dances and ceremonies still held include the box drum dance called Kalukok. Now, this is done at Point Hope. It's not done at Point Hope. It's one of the few places where it's not done. It's done at Wainwright, the neighboring village, north of Point Hope. It's done at Wainwright, it's done at Barrow, and it's done by the King Islanders in Nome. They have this large box about 2 feet high with a zigzag wooden top. The zigzag wooden top symbolizes the feathers of the eagle and the beat of the drum, which is hit on the side with a wooden baton. It symbolizes the heartbeat of the eagle. And there's an ancient legend attached to this story of the origin of the box drum dance about how the box came floating in like a crate from the sea, and the voice within said to take the box out of the water and to use it as a special drum in the wolf dance, where they put on real wolf heads as masks and wear long gauntlet rattles and shake their arms with a rattling motion, and the rattles are made of puffin bills, large beaks taken from the Arctic puffin bird and sewn on by the women to the gauntlet rattles. And we can listen now to Weir Negavana of the Wainwright dance team explaining about the box drum and the Kalukok dance.
Kalukok, it's kind of slow. La 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 la. La la, that's like a wall.
Yeah.
La 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 la. You see, some of the real cat dancing is different.
Yeah.
When you hit the kalupak, just stick with a bar.
Yeah, the
that is the song that goes along with the very special box drum dance, which is a very special ceremonial dance for giving gifts. The gifts are laid out on the floor of the karigi or ceremonial hut in front of the man who is seated playing the box drum. This large crate is suspended from the ceiling and it's swung from side to side. On his head, the drummer must wear a loon skin headdress. The loon bird hollowed out and worn across the crown of the head. And he beats the side of the drum with a heavy beater, and the man standing in front of him passes him the gifts, and the drummer calls out the name of the recipient of the gift, who is one of the audience present, maybe some distinguished visitor from a neighboring village. And then he passes it to a man behind him, who gives it to the honored guest who comes up to receive his gift. His gift. This is a very interesting dance, full of lots of floor motion, where the lines of women and men are moving backwards and forwards across the floor. The culminating dance of the box drum dance is called the exit song. And now we can hear Win Negavana and Homer Bodfish and all of the expert dancers, drummers, and singers from Wainwright do the exit dance.
This one is when you start to go out, the sound.
Exit.
I'm finishing. Until he finish, dancer go out, he stop drumming, you know. Mm-hmm.
Professor Johnston compares music of the Inupiaq-speaking Eskimos with that of the Yupik-speaking people.
There are certain differences. First of all, the sound of the music is different. The songs, the way they compose them, is a different style. In the Southwest, they have many, many verses, and the song goes on longer. Instead of just being sung twice through, first time softly and slowly, and then fast and loud, first time with nonsense syllables, second time with real words. In the Southwest, every verse is part of a story and goes on and on like a long tale. And in between each verse, there's a kind of vamp till ready, a little interlude done by the drummers, just a sort of little pitter-pat to fill in the time. And during that time, the song leader may shout some cues to the dancers and the drummers and singers, or he might tell a little bit of the story to the audience, and then we go into the next verse. Also, in the Southwest, men kneel and use dance bands. They have these circular hoops, very beautiful, with feathers on, and they manipulate them in the air, sort of extending the arms out into space, almost like the Eskimo personality itself, which is a very, very expansive, outgoing personality. And these dance bands greatly enhance the dance motions and help to tell the story. Another difference is that in the Southwest, they beat the drums on top, whereas in the Northwest, the drums are hit from underneath.
Hmm, and there are many other differences, and I think mm-hmm. that's the subject of yet another discussion. And thank you very much, Dr. Tom Johnston.
Thank you.
Echoes. I'm Paula Schiller, and Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM in Fairbanks.